Hello, I am Neil, and welcome to Chips of Chorlton. This is episode 23, and we have travelled a little bit north this time, away from our leafy suburbs of Chorlton and Stretford, and we have ventured to Super Venue. Yes, we are sort of, but they've put us in the dirty dungeon of a basement, haven't they? So
it's very cold, but it's very nice.
Very cold, very good. Yes. Yeah. And I am joined, as ever, by three members of Dutch Uncles. To my right is Andy.
Hello.
And I have Duncan next to him.
Hi.
And then Robin to his right.
Hello.
And we are joined this week from seminal Manchester band Pins. Faith, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
No problem at all. And congratulations.
Oh, thank you.
On your new arrival. Yeah. Is everything going okay? We've had this conversation before upstairs, but is everything going okay?
Yes, it is, of course. It's been a bit of a tough one getting used to motherhood, but we're getting there.
Good.
And thank you for selecting us as one of your nights out.
That's the biggest honor.
That's the big one. Yeah. We were talking before about how precious these are. You know, Neil, you're only allowed out every 6.5 weeks, aren't you?
If that, Andy.
Long gone are the days of sitting in Duffy's all day. Actually, we did that last week.
We did that last week, didn't we?
Yeah.
Bernie, that was one of your passes, wasn't it?
I had a pass.
You get passes.
You do get passes.
A man approaching 40 gets passes.
Do you have to mention my age? I didn't, within 90 seconds of the podcast.
I didn't actually mention your age, though, did I? I implied the region of your age.
Anything up to 40.
But yeah, everything okay? Everything healthy and everything good?
Yeah, happy and healthy.
First question is, how does it fit in with your rock star lifestyle, I suppose, you know, being the lead singer of Pins?
Well, we played a show. I still carried on playing throughout being pregnant until May, I think, was the last show. We did a festival in Leicester and then bowed out for the summer. And then we've got a show in October. So it's not too much time to be away. But, I think it was important just to have that bit of recovery and getting used to family life and taking it slow, getting back into it as well.
Yeah.
Can I ask, what was the... I mean, and I'm not implying here at all that, you know, you can't go on stage without having a drink or anything like that. But when you are in a touring position as, you know, as a mother in waiting, how is it that change of... Is there any change of perception when you're doing the touring circuit, not being able to kind of numb yourself from the whole absurdities of everything around what's going on?
Did
you find yourself kind of... Did you find like any sort of behavioural changes within yourself?
Yeah, absolutely. So I went on tour last year in October. So the first week I didn't know that I was pregnant, and then the second week I did know. So it was like first week was in the UK. You know, let's not talk about that. The second week had to be like completely, absolutely sober. It was like, you know, flipping a switch and being a completely different person. Yeah. But my band members were not. So I saw all of them in a different light. I thought, my God, is that what I'm like?
Yeah. I mean, that's the thing. I could imagine that, you know, you see the terrifying truth of everyone else, like getting on it and doing what you do on tour and just sort of basically like numbing yourself to survive.
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, I'm a bit terrified that there was such a contrast as well, because I wouldn't want to see it.
Like. There really was, and especially with my band, it's like everybody likes to get on it quite a lot anyway. But I think that was the peak of really going for it. You know, it was full on, and they didn't slow down.
Perfect. They were just celebrating.
Yeah.
Did you come out of it like slightly scarred? Like, I've seen things.
Oh, I was glad to get home, because that's when the sickness had started kicking in as well. So I was very glad to get home. And then it was Christmas and everything. And then this year we only played a few shows. So it's not, you know, there wasn't any like, weren't on the road, so to speak, or anything.
So what about the writing? I suppose, let's just jump straight into it. So I think I read that the Pins album is already, is it done?
Yes.
Is it written? Is it recorded?
Yeah.
Where'd you record it?
We did it at the Warner Studios in London.
Okay.
We demoed it ages ago, and then like obviously band members left, so that was a bit of a change. So we like scrapped everything, like went back to the beginning, and then we've been recording there for like the past 2 years, just on and off. And it's all done.
So who produced it this time? As you sort of had Mark did a a bit of stuff, and then Jamie from Kills did a single as well. So who's on that?
Jamie did two songs on this album.
Okay.
Richard Woodcraft was the engineer, and I'd say that he was the main producer, like, consistently throughout all of it. But we also worked with Dean from the Moon Landings and International Teachers of Pop. And Nathan from the Fat White Family. Did a little bit on it as well. Because we did most of it in London, and we had a few days in Sheffield at the Champ Zone, the Fat White Family studio. I don't think it exists anymore. Right. Shut down and moved. But yeah, cool. So it was nice to be able to go there for a bit.
So what can we expect then from the record? What's the difference between that and the one? It's been a while since you've done a fully, like, an album, hasn't it?
Yeah.
Since 2015.
Yeah, so we did Wild Nights, and it's like a complete contrast to that, I think. But then since Wild Nights, we did Bad Thing, which was an EP. Yep. And then that single, Serve the Rich, which was like meant to be the little in-between thing leading into album, but then, you know, the time just gets away and we're like, oh god, it's like 2 years since that, and like, whatever.
I wanted to ask you about that, actually, because only realizing that this is the third album that's finished now, and mm-hmm. I remember you sending me a copy of Wild Nights when just before it came out. You gave me a SoundCloud link to it all, and I think I've moved house like three times since then. I was like, wow, is this the next album since then? And obviously, as you said, you've done singles and EPs and things, and I was wondering whether that was sort of a way of sort of embracing more of the 70s actual punk rock way of, you know, kind of, you know, releasing things kind of drip by drip. Singles aren't really part of albums back then, are they? Except for when, like, London Calling changed up that whole sort of mixture in terms of track list. And I was wondering whether it was about that, or whether it was just to do with sort of kind of just keeping yourselves, you know, on the radio and keeping yourselves within festivals or not.
Well, there's always that, trying to keep the offers coming in. I think we've milked that album as dry as we possibly can. But I think it was more to do with, we were with Bella Union at the time when we did Wild Nights, and then we left them, and we wanted to just do something on our own, because we do House of Pins, which is like our own little label, and we just wanted to establish ourselves again and take the control back again, and just put something out that we were really happy with, and that we could choose everything, you know, every little bit about it. And it's the song that record that we got Iggy Pop to be on. So I feel like, you know, we were successful in doing what we set out to do, and it gave us
was that like an aim when you sort of when the song was written? Was it an aim to get Iggy Pop
involved? Not at all. We never knew that it was, because it's a spoken word track, so we didn't think too much of it, really. And like, my husband Mark wrote the lyrics to it anyways, and it was when we were in Berlin, so I don't know if there might be some kind of connection there, you know, like the Iggy Berlin connection but it was subconscious, like, he didn't do any of that on purpose. It was only when we were in Scotland, we made like a little makeshift studio in a house up there to record that EP, and then whilst we were there, I don't know, we'd had a bit of wine or whatever, and we were like, oh my god, who should we get on this? Let's ask Iggy Pop, you know, just throwing it out there. You know, he can only say no. So we did, and he said yeah, and then we're like, do you know what, like, we've done it what we wanted to achieve with this EP. That was it, like, it's felt solid, you know.
That's a pretty high bar to set, Iggy Pop. Like, how did that come about? Did you just like slide into his DMs?
In terms of the people you could ask to do that, you know, he's there, he's up there with Tom Waits, really, and, you know, kind of just that classic, like, it ain't getting bigger than that.
Yeah, there's
it?
Not many of those rock stars left, are there? Like, you know, the big ones.
Yeah. And then he comes around and asks you to do the same for him. For James Bond.
Yeah.
Now, how does that come around?
Yeah, just think, Iggy had some wine and he was like,
who am I going to get to do
this? Maybe, I don't know. Now, I met his manager. He came to the studio when we were in London just to, like, say hi.
Oh, this was,
you know, like, after.
Did he have his top on, or?
This wasn't Iggy, just his manager.
Oh, right.
Topless management.
He did have his top on, yeah.
So sorry. thought you meant like Iggy and his manager. I'm sorry.
No, I've never met him. I'm going to go to London next month, and I think that's going to be the meeting.
So you've never met him?
No,
so
it was just transatlantic friendship.
That's so bonkers, that, isn't it? Because you've sung on each other's tracks.
Yeah, and we always speak through our managers as well.
Really?
So
yeah, there's no way.
We've never, like...
You haven't got his number.
Everyone's topless.
And also the fact that he's on Six Music now doing his Friday nights. So is he still doing the Friday nights there?
He must do.
I think the Six Music connection feels like it should be more possible to have see him knocking around somewhere. You know what I mean? Whether it be London or Manchester or something.
I think he must do that show from his...
Yeah, I believe he does it from his Miami home
with his parrot on his shoulder.
Of course.
Is it a parrot or a parakeet?
Have you seen that documentary that he did with Josh Homme?
You say Homme still?
Yeah.
Is it Homme or
Homme?
Because
Homme.
He wants to get it right.
Know. Is it Homme or Homme?
I think it is Homme, but I always say Homme.
Yeah, we all say Homme.
So American Valhalla, so Josh Homme... And Josh Homme wrote the music for Iggy Pop's album, the previous one. The new one's just
post-pop depression.
And he just, what a fucking dude Iggy Pop is. He's just in this kind of almost kind of Shaq-esque thing in a field, doing whatever Tai Chi or yoga every morning, brewing his own black coffee. And I just imagine him doing those Six Music shows.
Yeah.
Just sat in that shack, just like surrounded by absolute beauty. What a dude, you know?
I remember thinking when I first heard about Iggy's show on Six Music, thinking that it was a bit of a coup for Six Music to get him at the time because he was such a big act.
Yeah.
I always thought that was a bit of a turning point for the station as well, just because it now has that... I don't know if he has that many connections in the UK generally or like frequently, but yeah, now it's for someone that famous to be, you know, all over that, just for the music, I guess.
So you think you'll meet him maybe next month?
Yeah.
Is that so? Whereabouts that'll be down in London? Is he doing a gig or?
Yeah, he's doing a session at Maida Vale for Six Music.
Are you gonna do the James Bond song? Is that the...
If he asks me to.
Well, I'll see what we can do by the power of this podcast, Faith.
But when you do meet him, let us know if he is topless.
Or like at least the percentage of his day that he's topless.
I fully expect him to be topless.
You would think so, wouldn't you?
Until maybe the winter months. And then it'll just be big coat over the skin. You know.
You're going summer somewhere.
Well, yeah, no, but if he's performing Maida Vale, he's not going to, if he's performing, he'll be topless. Yeah. Do you think, right?
Yeah, it could absolutely be.
Going back to what Neil was saying before, Faith, do you think that Neil looks a bit like Josh Homme?
Yeah, a bit.
I used to before I had two kids.
You really didn't.
We've been over this a few times, haven't we?
We have. What do you call me?
Well, at first it was a pound shop Josh Homme, and then it turned into pound bakery Josh Homme, which is a bit harsh, isn't it?
Thanks guys for embarrassing me in front of a person that I've only just met. It's totally fine.
Hey mate, at least it ain't Rob Brydon. Don't worry about it.
Or David Cameron.
Yeah. Oh my god, that video was so unforgiving, wasn't it, Andy?
Oh god.
And you got a haircut that day. That was really nice.
What a Cadenza video.
I had a few more
pounds on me as well at the time, and I just really looked like David Cameron.
Just to bring it up speed. When we made our video for when we were subjected to make a video for Cadenza, because it wasn't really a video we agreed with, loads of budget was spent on it, and basically as soon as we got to, there was a makeup division for it. It was like, what, there's makeup in there? And as soon as we got in there, you were just like, yeah, I'll have a haircut straight away. You were just like completely into it. I was like, I don't know, bit of foundation, not sure, don't get it on my silk shirt please, like how long do we have to be here? And then all the
YouTube comments were harsh.
Oh no, you've got to turn off the comments.
It's like there's a cupboard bursting out and you just want to see what's in it. And all it is pure shit.
Oh, I never want to see.
Yeah.
You have a very hands-on approach when it comes to video making, don't you? Within Pins.
Yes.
What's the reasoning for such a thing?
I mean, who else is going to do it for us? Like, that's no one's offering. If someone wants to swoop in and save the day, then I'm happy to put my feet up. But no, usually it's just we need a video, and then we just get together and think, how shall we make this happen? Who do we want to work with? And most of the time it's like on a shoestring budget. Yeah. So just got to make what you can or do it yourself.
Yeah. I suppose we've been probably guilty of waiting, like you say, waiting for people to try and swoop in and help us and then maybe criticising them that they haven't got the idea that we want.
Well, it can go either way, really, can't it?
Depends
yeah.
how you treat the process, doesn't it, really? I suppose, especially thinking back on videos of yours that I've seen in the past, it's something that kind of more complements the experience of pins for fans as well as for yourselves, you know, in a way. Yeah. Whereas I think sometimes when we've done videos, it's just a complete spin job on like, don't listen to the music, watch the video instead. Kind of thinking in some ways where, you know, you just kind of take out all aspects yeah. of the fact that it's a band.
I think
we did the music almost.
Yeah, I think we've looked for maybe gimmicks or something to put in like a PR package. Like, yeah. look at the way he dances. Yeah. Or, you know.
Or look at that bit of ball sack.
Look at that bit of ball sack. The classic press release.
David Cameron.
Oh, look at David Cameron on drums.
David Cameron blowing up a balloon and playing drums. Sorry.
And your best video wasn't even attached to a single. Probably Nomito, I'm thinking. It was probably my favourite Dutch Uncles video.
That was a single, Neil.
Yeah, the stop motion.
Was it?
Really big single, top one.
Didn't you drop your own label?
Yeah, that's what happened. No, we Wayne Rooney'd our music label at the time, and so they decided not to release the video, and so it never got released.
Spent a long time
in Eddie and Ryan's office studio making that stop motion video for Nomito.
They
never released it in the end. Is it on YouTube?
Yeah, I don't know.
Yeah.
It's
fantastic.
Well, it's going to get on 120 minutes, is it?
So. Modern reference.
So who's releasing the your new record, Pins and New Record? Are you doing it yourself, or is that...
It's up in the air.
Is it? Okay.
Yeah.
Okay.
One way or another, it's going to come out.
It's coming out.
So.
So it could potentially be the first LP on House of Pins?
It could be, if it goes that way. It's one of those things that, like, I love Bella Union, but it wasn't going to really go any further with them. So we had to just make that decision, like, do you want to stick with them or do you want to twist and see where else you can go? And we decided, let's just take a risk and go for it. And, you know, I feel that the EP went well and that if we have to, we will be able to do like a full-length record ourselves too.
Yeah, that'd be great. I mean, that's not really ever crossed our minds, has it, in a weird sort of way? But I think
we managed ourselves for a while, and even that was a bit of a effing nightmare.
Yeah, I kept locking myself out of the online bank.
But then again, like it is. But at the same time as it being a nightmare, it does also invigorate you. It completely makes you feel like, you know, your own master of sorts. And I suppose, you know, doing a record in that context would definitely it would sort of provide an impetus that you never knew was there.
What I've thought before about sort of being institutionalized in record labels is that I think we have really liked it when our record label has said that they really like something. I think that's always like quite a buzz for us. For me anyway, it was just for anyone to be like, yeah, that's great, that's good enough.
It's like a huge compliment anyway.
Yeah, exactly. Whereas if you're on your own, you're your own critic, and often that's the hardest place to be.
How often do, I suppose it's an open question to everyone, how often do the labels turn around and say, no, that's shit, do it again? You know,
they never say that. It's more just like apathy. It's more like, yeah, maybe you should try and
but
like something else.
Yours was a major label, no?
No.
No, no. Oh, oh no, no, no.
Who was it?
We're in the basement, don't you know? That's why.
We've been signed to Memphis Industries for the last four albums.
Right, yeah.
Which is... They're an indie's indie, in a sense, because I think a lot of indie labels actually work in a co-op sense where they will work together.
Yeah.
And it was only on the last album that we did with Memphis, with Big Balloon, that they'd actually started working alongside Moshi Moshi, for example, and actually kind of sort of pulling strings together and going, well, you know, this is what we can provide, they can provide this, and all of a sudden we're able to play, like, Glastonbury and play Margate and things like that. And, you know, you open yourselves up to everyone else's kind of party in a way, isn't it? It's just like going, oh, by the way, there's this thing going on as well, and we're friends with them now. But I think for a long time, as we were working with Memphis, they were very much their own island.
Yeah.
but not yeah. Island Records, but their own islands. We'll edit this all out. I'm sure.
But yeah, I mean, going back to sort of record label criticism or praise, I think for us, if genuinely, if someone from the label had gone, that's fucking brilliant, that's the best thing you've ever written, that's your first single, and we disagreed, we would have been like, yep, yeah, fine. And sort of disagreed with ourselves. I never really felt like we had. Yeah, it's basically what did happen. Yeah,
that is what.
Completely disagreed with them, but we just went with it anyway.
Yeah,
actually, that happened twice.
So you're easily swayed.
I think it's swayed. Yeah, vain.
Oh, is that unfair?
No, it's pretty fair. It's definitely fair.
Ultimately, that is definitely fair. At the same time, I think what it is just. I think it's just a general lethargy, or just that moment of. You know, sort of just being tired, and when someone says, "You know what's great? This is great, and this is going to be the answer to what you're kind of worried or trying to figure out," and you just go, "You know what? Yeah, fine, whatever."
Yeah,
just like they just catch you at that moment. They just catch you after you've kind of gone from. I'm trying to think of some sort of I don't know, like you've driven from Bristol to, let's say. Cambridge, because it's hard to get to Cambridge, and then they've met you in Cambridge, and then you've done the gig after, like, you know, a long day, and it's like, hey, you know what's a great idea? Re-releasing that song. Yeah. They'll be like, yeah, fine, whatever. Just let me get home. Yeah. Like, and that's the moment where the decision has to get made.
Anything to get into the Travelodge room and drink our warm Stellas.
Yeah, just let me get to my warm Stella, please. I think that's how it comes around.
You're right.
But
you're right.
Ultimately, it is.
Yeah, and I think just the willingness to get it done, and once you've spent so long doing it, and the impatientness that you have for it to come out, if there are like logistical things in the way, then you can just palm your morals for a bit just to get it out, basically.
Yeah.
Whereas that was quite brave to not do Bella Union because you knew that you wanted to do it on your own and you could trust yourselves. I guess.
I think that is something that we do have. We do trust our own instincts. And also it's like, I don't care, like, what's the worst that's going to happen? Do you know what I mean? It was like, I didn't start the band so that we could be, like, superstars. I just started the band because it would be fun and we could see where it would go. And then, you know, like, we're like, oh my God, imagine if we played in Leeds, imagine if we played in Liverpool, and then you do those things, and then you're like, oh, imagine if we got to go to South by Southwest, oh, and then you do that, and like then you find yourself touring in America, like supporting your favourite bands and everything, and it just, I don't know, just like do it each day as it comes.
Yeah.
With that in mind, how do you feel about playing Neighbourhood Festival next month, which for listeners who are completely unaware as to what that is, it's a relatively new festival that happens in Manchester's, like, it's urban, isn't it? It happens between venues around, including, yes, actually, where we are in the Southern Quarter. But of course, you know, being a band of significant time as ourselves, you know, like, how does it feel for you, like, sort of playing Manchester after all that time, being part of that kind of a lineup? What are your feelings towards it?
I'm just glad because it's near my house. Like, you know, it's one of those things where we're going to go and play a show. It's the first one away from my daughter, but it's going to be for a few hours and then I can go home and see her. Having said that, I am really excited to play some new songs to people and see who shows up to watch us. You know, will it be the old crowd, or will we get some new faces, or and what will people think? You know, and we're playing at Gorilla as well. I've not played there for ages. Ooh. So I'm excited for that.
Yeah.
So next week is the Mercury Music Prize event.
Are we doing anything for it, Neil?
Oh, we are. So we are going to do a live show similar to what we did last year, where we will, and there's going to be cameras on and things like that, so we can get in a room, we can watch the Mercury's, and is it safe to say that on the whole we slag it off? No, we don't slag it off, do we? We're very, very critical and very, very appreciative of some of the good music that...
I clearly remember last time when the winner was announced, we all shouted, fuck off, in unison, didn't we?
Yeah, well, so have you had... I'm going to put you all on the spot here. Sorry, Faith. This is where... Because what we have to do is we have to listen to the records before we critique them on the night.
Yeah.
The guy should listen to the records. Have you listened to any of the records since... The announcement?
No, my Spotify account got cancelled.
Right. By you?
No. Because I didn't want to listen to another album. No, it got cancelled because I was sharing it, and I think I was sharing it with my dad, and he doesn't live with me. So I think my account got deleted. And quite rightly too. What a horrible freeloader I am. Duncan?
Yeah, I've definitely skimmed through all of them, including the jazz album.
Good effort.
Looking at Rob with a beady eye there, two beady eyes. I would say I've listened to all of them, although I may have rushed it slightly. I will give them all a listen with a deep bath, I think, in the week.
It's going to be a long bath.
Long bath, yeah. And I don't know if it's age or not, but my fingers shrivel up quickly these days.
That's the Mercury's.
Which, yeah,
that's
so...
the magic of the Mercury.
Oh, the magic of the Mercury's. Yeah, but I've listened to them all.
And has your opinion changed on the records after a listen? On who you think might win or might not?
It has changed. Because my initial thinking was that it's the 1975s to lose, in a sense. Just because, for me, it's the biggest global... It's had the biggest global impact of any of those albums on the lineup, but I think the more I think about it now, I mean, I'm all higgledy-piggledy on it. I couldn't tell you who I think's going to win, but I definitely don't think it'll be them now.
Okay, interesting.
One thing I've really liked about it is things like I've finally discovered Anna Calvi now and things like that, because I'd always sort of dismissed Calvi previously just on whatever kind of either whatever singles or whatever live videos had come my way. I'd always been like, all right, okay, but then just not been in the mood for it. But then actually sitting down and giving that album a proper listen, it's fantastic. That's a really good album. As is Idols, because I felt like I knew what the package of Idols was before I'd listened to the album, but now that I've listened to the album, I feel like I understand the entire philosophy behind the band, the name, the performance, every aspect of it. And although I don't think that gives it as much longevity as they would like, it is very, you know what I mean? Like, I see the full colour of it now.
Because I heard of them when they were being played on Steve Lamacq's show, like, ages and ages ago.
Idols.
And then, and then slowly, like, started, you know, they just got bigger and bigger and bigger. And then on TV, I was watching Glastonbury and they were playing a set there, and like the singer really like seemed really emotional. It did seem really sincere. So, but do you think that that's not real? I don't know. Do you think?
what do you fucking think, Neil? No, I do agree, and I think it's one of the highlights of the Glastonbury coverage was watching Idols. I suppose it's because again that his wife came on with child.
Yeah.
And I've not to go in the kid train again, but I vividly remember when my first son Connor came to see Dutch Uncles when we were all playing. It was a festival, it was great. So I can imagine being from where they are in the world and playing at Glastonbury at the Park Stage, it was going off, and his wife and his newborn kid are there. It must have been fantastic for him. So I think that was really
sincere. Unless that's what he wanted us to think.
There's a lot of 4D chess in the world.
But then there's the other thing about it. I think for a lot of the slanging off that comes Idol's way, I think it's for people who, God forbid, have tried to review the album on the opening track. I can't imagine ever being a victim of that. So,
wait, hold any grudges.
I don't even know what that grudge is.
Sorry, and it was NME, wasn't it, when they reviewed Cadenza. And they just opened the review with, can we shut up about time signatures?
Oh.
And gave us a 5 out of 10 and literally just talked about the opening track and that was it. But the thing is, though, when you get to the heart of Idol's album, and I'm pretty sure, I mean, obviously there's the song about a miscarriage in there. Yeah. And I think it's a personal song about a miscarriage between the singer and his wife, possibly. Edit this bit out so it makes it sound like I know what I'm talking about.
Yeah, yeah.
But the fact that someone has been able to make such a personal tragedy that concise within a 3 or 4 minute song in the middle of the album, and then not only that, but then to actually open up, it's almost as if that personal tragedy has awoken the idea of the tragedies that are happening all over, everywhere, in every slither of society, and and outside of this country as well. You know, he's been able to go, despite the fact that I've been through this, I also see the problem with this and with this and with this and with this, and it actually makes it a very much deeper and thicker album than I first presumed for something that actually is one of the rare examples of listening to an album where I can hear every word the first time around. I can't remember the last time ever happened. You know, usually you get lost in someone's lyrics and go, oh, I have to re-listen to that. I heard every word and remembered it at the time. whilst I was having a curry, I think.
In the bath.
The first time over. And I think they've really, again, like the philosophy of being a band called Idols, simplifying political points to such witty and catchy sound bites, and it adds to the performance of what they can do. And it's beyond just being a band with a top off almost. I think they've made the full package. They'll probably never make an album as good as that. And if they don't, they don't. Like, you know, the industry doesn't owe them a career. Doesn't owe anyone a career. So, you know, the idea that they have to worry about, well, what your next three albums going to sound like, that's them. That's for them to worry about.
Yeah.
Well, I haven't listened to the album yet. I've heard the singles, but you've sold it on me. I want to vote Idols now. I'm all in.
Sorry, Neil.
Well, I find
no, I really like the record.
I find it very unsure, the whole, you know, Sleaford Mods kind of trying to pick at them as if to say, well, you're just middle class boys anyway. It's like they wrote that album with full time jobs.
Someone will say something about it anyway. You can't win, so you just got to do what you're doing and forget it.
We got slagged off on Twitter this week, didn't we? Just out of the blue. Like,
well, it also got deleted rather quickly.
Oh, it did, didn't it?
Yeah, we got accused of being jean salesmen.
What do you mean?
I think we did. You did. You're the ultimate musical gentrifiers, aren't you? Basically,
indeed.
I will
toast to that in my free jeans and free boots.
But the only thing is, there's context to every, especially in the indie industry. There's context to every little what is perceived as a sellout. Like, I think we might have got paid like 250 quid to do that.
What did you do?
Just like Duncan and Rob did an interview for Levi's about Manchester. It wasn't really about jeans or anything, it was just about Manchester.
And they gave you some free jeans and you wore them.
Yeah, and we got paid some money.
We got paid in some denim.
That's
and
all right.
Some money.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
But the context is the fee.
But that's the absurd.
The context is the fee from that pays for a rehearsal room for a month. And it's not like we're fucking millionaires. Yeah. Well, it's not even like we even can actually make a full time living off it. So to be critiqued for that is just irrelevant, you know.
Just horrible bastard. Andy.
Pick a bigger injustice.
What was the comment? Jean salesman.
Yeah.
It's a really lame thing to say as well.
Yeah. I think it's because we were talking about Manchester in a certain context, as if to say it's never been richer, where in fact, in this band's experience, they have seen nothing but venue closures and a lack of, just a lack of scene, I suppose. But yeah. I think that comes down to taste and whatever. I mean,
but also the video was 2 years old.
Yeah, I mean, I'd be curious to ask actually, Faith. Obviously, because we've grown up within the Manchester scene in an umbrella sense at the same time, and yet, to my memory right now, certainly 3 pints in, you guys are the only all girl group I can think of, especially from that time really coming up. Like, did you ever feel isolated, sort of coming through the Manchester ranks, pretty much being the only female band? Unless there's someone I've forgotten who's going to be really painfully obvious.
I mean, I think there's a lot of female bands now, or there's at least some, or there's more than. But I didn't really notice that there was many when we were starting out.
No.
But I didn't really feel like isolated now. I didn't really have that thing of like, we're girls, you're guys. It just wasn't a thing in our minds. It was only when we started doing it that other people made it a thing.
Yeah.
Do you worry about the creeping identity politic within certain either festivals or themes within music, either on radio? Do you feel like that's sort of becoming more of a potential division?
I find it frustrating that, you know, even though festivals have been called out for only having a certain amount of female acts, they just continue to do that anyway. At least, you know, there's usually 3 nights at a festival. It's like, make one of the headliners female, you know, like what's, you know, just so that there's some inspiration for young women.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. Yeah, totally.
That would be nice. And then also, I don't really use Twitter very often at all. And I think the last time I was on it where I was like actually interacting with anyone was about XFM or Radio X, whatever, and I was just commenting saying, you know, like the last 10 songs that have been on have been all male bands. Like, what's that about? And then when I looked at the DJs that were there, I was like, there's maybe like one.
Yeah. When they changed their name to Radio X, and it pretty much became sort of like straight Pride FM in a sense.
A good friend
of mine who DJs at Girls on Film, Hattie Pearson, I'm pretty sure she was the only female DJ on their roster. She was doing the graveyard shift for, you know, she was doing 1 till 4 a.m., like up with the Partridge. Like, that's what she was doing for so long there.
It's basically like radio Top Gear, isn't it, really?
Yeah.
Well, I just thought it was pathetic, and then their response was that they're just not going to play pins. I was like, okay.
Fucking hell.
So I was like, okay, well, nice one. So, whatever.
Yeah, here's a Stereophonics B-side for you.
Some Oasis followed by some Noel. What's that about?
Gallagher sandwich.
Bringing it back to the Mercury chat, though, and again, considering the establishment of pins, of being in the industry and the scene for as long, how do you feel about the Mercury? Does it feel like anything? Are there any sort of artistic sort of wants or values towards the Mercury? Like, you know, especially like when writing like another album, is it something that you feel like you'd want to get on the bucket list or anything like that?
I mean, it's not something that I've ever thought of, because it just seems like one of those unreachable things. Like, I don't even see it in the realm of like the band I'm in. You know, I'm not trying to criticize myself, but I know that we're a small band, so I don't even think of it like that. Like, I'd be interested to see who wins, but don't you have to pay like 300 quid just to get in it?
Our regular listeners have probably heard us complain about this before, but I'm pretty sure it's like 200 or 300 quid to enter the album, followed by, if you do get it, you then have to pay like 2 grand for a table and £500 for every chair around it.
Well, if we ever have any spare cash, then I might throw it at that just to see what happens. But, you know, at this point, it's just something more that I'll just be interested to see who wins and where it takes them.
Yeah. You got nominated for, was it an AIM award?
Yeah.
That's amazing.
That's really good.
We didn't win, though.
Did you go? Did you go to the...
No.
The shenanigans, no.
I can't remember why. I think it was literally that it was in London, and at that time we just couldn't afford to go there as a band.
Yeah.
You know, yeah. There's been a lot of, like, opportunities like that where... We had like full-time jobs and still trying to do the band, and then you can't like go to everything, like playing shows and then driving through the night. And, you know, we used to drive around in Lois's blue Corsa just to get to gigs, borrow everyone's gear. It's only now that we're like only just out of that, and that's, you know, it's not as though that's, you know, still have to do all the DJing and everything just to like make a bit of money. I'm not complaining. It's nice to be able to make a living out of music, for sure.
Exactly. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. So we have to do a Chip related song. It's a Faith. Obviously, I know you listen to our podcast regularly.
I've listened to a few, thank you.
If there's any song that you think, I'm trying to think of like maybe an Iggy Pop song.
I was thinking of an Iggy Pop song as well, but they don't, it's all spoken word, isn't it?
I was thinking of China Girl, but his version of China Girl is quite hard to find the melody to sing.
Maybe
Chips,
we should just describe what...
Yeah, Chippy. What's your favourite TV show?
What are you watching at home? Baby in Arm.
Mindhunter.
How did you know?
We're all doing it. does that even have a thing? It doesn't really have a thing.
It does, but you just skip it every time.
It's like a bit like the Westworld theme tune, isn't it? Sort of menacingly eerie.
It's not got like a discernible melody in it.
It hasn't, and it's like, you know, because it's Netflix, you would just hear it once and then you always skip.
Anyway.
Okay.
And I have listened. I've listened to the Everything Everything one.
I'm joking.
Maybe the listeners should just imagine a Chip song that it sounds like Iggy Pop, Pins and Dutch Uncles all in one.
That sounds like Sparks.
Yeah.
let's do this Chip ain't big enough for the both of us.
Go on.
Chip time for us.
Is it just me?
Yeah.
That was spot on. That was lovely. Okay. Well done.
I still don't understand the concept of why you needed that bit of music, but I'm glad that happened.
Yeah. We rolled with it, Faith. It happened.
So we are at Yes. Yes is about a year or so old now.
Yeah, because we played the opening night, and that was the last time I played drums.
Fucking hell.
Literally, yeah. Last time you sat at the throne.
Yes, indeed. Throne.
Before we move on to the chips, what do you think of Yes then, as a venue and as a place to come and drink and eat?
Well, I feel like it's great, obviously. I think a multi-venue, multi-purpose sort of entertainment hospitality space is great. Loads of stuff going on. Yeah. But it was obviously based on or sort of inspired by where we were last week. The Belgrave. So, you know, two medium-sized venues in one and a lot of other stuff going on as well. I think it's great. I really like it.
Yeah, yeah. So I suppose we were chatting, weren't we? Sort of long gone are the days where venues like the Roadhouse that would open their doors at 7:30 for four bands and close at 11 and kick them out. Yeah. Those days are gone. So if you are to survive as a venue, you need a building like this.
I think the Roadhouse, as with the Ruby Lounge, I don't think that was their reason for closure. It wasn't the fact that they were just gig spaces. I think it was the fact that they were just in prime real estate spaces. They've just been bought out by Bobby Big Bulls.
But so is this, though, because we are surrounded by just flats being absolutely...
Student flats.
Yeah.
It's fine.
But I think with the Roadhouse... Those venues were in the Northern Quarter, weren't they?
Where you've got all the idiots moving to that think it's going to be...
Yeah. I think the problem is with the Roadhouse and the Ruby Lounge, though, is that they couldn't have opened in the day because no one would have gone. Because it's not an appealing...
No.
It's not an appealing place to be.
Yeah, exactly. Good God, no. Absolutely no way.
Yeah. So, if you are designing a venue from scratch, it would look like this, wouldn't it?
Yeah.
It certainly would, yeah. And as a DJ here, I can clarify that the formula does work. It's very good. Yeah. This place is still full, even after 3 a.m. And I'm like, how are you all still up?
You've already played
Venga Boys.
Please
let me go home. I've already played the Venga Boys. I've been told off for doing so. Please go home so I can go home. But people don't want to go home. The formula works here. It's really good.
Yeah. Do you like it here, Faith? You good? Yeah?
Yeah, I love it here.
Yeah. You DJ a lot quite here, don't you?
DJ here. We haven't played here yet, but I've been to some shows here. I think it's great. I like the pizza.
Pizza's good.
Pizza's good.
Yeah. But how are the chips?
That's the question.
All our listeners want to know.
They really do, you know.
I really like the chips. I thought it was crystallized vinegar, but I'm pretty sure it's just lime juice.
That's exactly what I thought as well.
What did you say it was?
Lime salt.
How did it come across as crystallized vinegar?
I think so.
Yeah, it probably is lime salt. It must be that.
Lime salt.
Essentially, there was a little bit too much of it, but the chips themselves were good and they were fresh. So, fair enough.
I'd like to echo those sentiments. I thought they were brilliant. I really liked them. Like you said, I thought they discovered this amazing crystallized vinegar. And then Faith said that lime salt exists. But I enjoyed it. I didn't think it was too overpowering. I thought it was... I like a flavorful chip.
What did you make of the dip?
Liked it as well.
Yeah.
I like it.
The thing is that it will all be vegan because the chip side comes from the vegan chicken side of the open kitchen. So that dip is like vegan mayo.
Yeah,
I'm
it's the same stuff that goes on the like vegan chicken burger that they have.
Yeah.
Right.
I don't know if you've tried that, but it's the same like sauce. Good.
Same. Yeah, I really liked
Seitan,
it.
Seitan, you know.
I liked them. I thought they were great. I don't know. I didn't like the sauce.
I've had better vegan mayos in my life.
It's
don't laugh.
Stop laughing. Where are we? You know. So yeah, but it was fine. Should we go around and do a little bit of a?
Yep, let's do it.
Andy, you go first. Go on for a change, and we'll go left.
I really like them. I'm going to go 7.2.
I will go 6.9.
6.9 has been entered.
Judge them out of 10 with decimalization as well.
10.
No. Oh,
yeah.
Wow. Wow.
You know,
this
has to go to the Scottish High Courts. Like, if this was Come Dine With Me, you'd have to reevaluate that score the next evening. I've seen that happen.
I am.
Because no one gets a 10. To counteract Faith's 10, I will put a 6.7.
6.7. 7 yeah. equals that divided by that.
I mean, because I wasn't that hungry okay. when the chips came, because I've finally learned after 23 episodes to actually eat before we do this.
Yeah. I mean, it's still not, you know, it's 7.74.
That's high.
It's already the winning entry.
It's very high.
That was a remarkably quick chip review, which begs me to ask the question, Faith. In all of your touring days, is there a particular favourite place you've eaten in any particular city? Is there anywhere that you've gone back to when you get back on the road?
Or
where you just think every time, yeah, maybe either food traditions on the road, or if there's any cities that whenever you go through there, you think, oh, I know where we're going before the gig.
Yes. So when we were in America, we made a lot of effort to find vegan places because at the time we were all vegan. So we discovered some really like amazing restaurants that I've never had anything like that over here. Like, I think they've really got their vegan game down, including, I think it's called, like, I don't know how you say it, herbivorous butchers. Yeah. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah,
plant-based.
Yeah.
Like,
yeah.
It had the knives on the doors and they wore like butcher outfits and they had like chopping boards and it all looked like meat. It was really weird, but it wasn't. It was all plant-based food. So that's one of the most interesting.
Where was that?
What city is Prince from?
Oh, Minnesota. Oh, Minneapolis,
there,
sorry.
There. yeah, because
did you go to the place? Did you go to the club?
Yeah.
Or did you see the club?
Yeah, we went past it because he literally had died just a few days before.
Oh, and wow.
So there was loads of people wearing purple walking around and like there was flowers and candles and everything.
Yeah. And it's quite a time to be there.
Yeah, like it was really surreal, I suppose, is what you'd say. But it was like nice as well. It was almost like the whole city came together and they were like, you know, just paying their respects. And
yeah
I thought it was nice. But apart from that, also when we go to Glasgow, we always like to get chips.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Get on board with that.
And that is, I don't know, when we're a bit, you know, when you're a bit sad, we turn to chips.
Yeah.
So if we've had a bit of a, you know, a long drive or a bad show or all just feeling a little bit worse for wear, we'll find the best chippy.
Where was the best... sympathy chip, then, I suppose.
Is there anywhere
you've had a really fucking shit show, but the chip saved you and you didn't expect it to? Where, you know, is there anywhere you can pick out? And please describe the show as well.
I think I can't remember what happened at the show. I remember a few years ago we played in Birmingham. I shouldn't really tell people this because it's more like shame. And it was like, you know, one of those nights it hadn't gone too well. It was raining. Do you know, there's a restaurant that's called, it's like... I need to remember what it's
called. Where did you play in Birmingham? What was the place? I can't remember.
Was it like in the city or was it outside the city?
Like Papa John's, but it's not, because that's that pizza place.
Yeah.
I think it's called Big John's, and it's
that's
like
the venue.
No, that's the place that we went afterwards. I don't remember the venue. I think it's called Big John's, but I'll have to check. And it's like, it sells everything. So it sells burgers, curry, chicken, chips, like anything that you could possibly want. And we just went in and ordered everything, and then sat in the car park in the rain in the van eating junk food.
Yes. Nice.
Can I ask, were you playing the Hare and Hounds?
Oh, probably, yeah.
Oh, I've got a feeling we may have been to this place.
Shit.
Did it have red chairs, like red sofas
and
things?
Yeah, it's kind of like a diner.
Very red, yeah.
And it's like a bit McDonald's, but it sells loads of different things.
Yeah, we've been there.
That does ring
a
bell.
I'm feeling that.
It's bad. It's very bad.
Mm. very slutty, kind of like food-wise, not people-wise.
Yeah.
Moving on from the food slightly, mm-hmm. we do tend to ask people about a particular low light in their musical career. Like a particularly bad gig, usually
for example,
less populated or no one was there.
Pretty much like this room now.
Yeah, I mean, we've played to rooms like this with this amount of people in it.
Often, if we'd play to no one, like if there's nobody there, we don't mind. We just end up making friends with those people and then asking them to take us out.
Yeah,
it's like a common thing that we do is like, if anyone's going out dancing, then we want to go, you know, take us with you, show us what's going on in your town, and just make the most of it. And I don't, I know it sounds really annoying, like you want me to be angry about it or something.
No, it's not at all. But I suppose the Europe thing is difficult, it's harder to swallow, because especially if you, we've gone to Europe before for one show, and that show has been, you know, not awful, we didn't play badly and we had a nice time there, you know, going to and from it, but there's been five people there, and we're sort of driving to that, spending all that time and sort of focusing
28 hours in a car to do a show to five people.
And I've always really struggled to sort of justify it, you know, if it was really bad, like I couldn't, it couldn't not affect me in a way. So I don't know what it is, it's a weird...
Well, off what Faith was saying then, it reminded me of when we finally went back to Hamburg. So when we were in Europe supporting Garbage on their 20 Years Queer tour, the anniversary of their first album, we had too many days off, and unfortunately for us, days off really does just burn the wallet. So it's like, no, we need to have a gig. We ended up getting a headline gig in Hamburg again for like the first time in 8 years. And the label that we used to hang out with, that we were signed to hang out with.
Hey, man.
They'd actually helped organise it, and it was a place called Klafterbang or something. Was it Klafterbang or Hafenklang? It was kind of by the coast.
It was right near
the Golden Poodle, which is now gone.
Yes,
which was by far the best bit of that. We had a great time afterwards. Exactly your point. That point exactly. But I just remember it being. I didn't know how to feel about this, the fact that, you know, we'd organised this gig after 8 years of never, you know, not really speaking to this label at all. And then they were even doing an interview upstairs with another one of their artists whilst we were sound checking. And then they didn't even bother to hang around for the gig. And then we didn't even talk to them. And we had about four people in the room. It was like, not even our old labels here. Like, what the hell's going on?
Do you know what?
It's like the most...
Yeah, that's not on, is it?
No, it's the best mic drop of a pen pal you could ever have.
Wow. We played to 3,000 people the night before as well. It's like, fucking hell, this is a come down.
And that's it for episode 23. Thanks to Faith for taking time away from her child to come and chat with us. Catch Pins at Neighbourhood Festival in October. Thank you to Rob, Andy and Duncan from Dutch Uncles. Please like and subscribe on your podcast provider. We have our live Mercury Music Show this Thursday the 19th. I'll be posting links on Twitter on how to get on that live stream. Thank you very much for listening again, and hopefully I'll see you soon. Bye-bye.